Welcome to the Passion Behind the Art Show. It's all about diving in with individuals to learn the story behind their passion. It's your host, Daryl Pinnock.
It's another week, another amazing guest, and another opportunity for me to bring you value through someone else's story. This week's episode will be coming to you from Creative South. I was asked by Mike Jones to come out and record live at the conference, and I had a blast. Creative South is one of my favorite conferences to go to. It's a magical place. It's all about community, and it's all about building each other up. No matter what level you are, you will get value, and you will find people that are much more excited about pushing you up than pushing you down. So, without further ado, this week's episode.
All right, we are live here at Creative South Passion Behind the Art Show with my brother, Raska. I probably destroyed his name, so we have like an inside joke going on, so it's basically, we just call him Russell, just to be on the safe, but Russell.
Oh, man.
Give us the right pronunciation of your show, of your name.
Yeah, I mean, my name's not very long, but it's pronounced Raksa.
Raksa.
Yes.
Raksa. I will never do that again.
Nah, you're good.
Well, dude, let's jump right into it. How did your creative journey start?
Oh, my journey to design or yeah. Yeah. Yes, I went into design on a hunch, really. Mm. I actually, when I was young, I was one of those kids that drew in a margin. I was always creative. I knew that early on. But, you know, when you're 18 or 17 and you're a senior in high school, you get the whole pressure of like, okay, we're going to do for college. And, you know, all my other friends are all like going to apply for like a doctor or engineering or accountant, at least with like my surrounding friend, my circle friend. But for me, I was like, I want to be creative. And I was thankful to have a high school counselor who showed me this world of art schools. And so, okay. And so I thought I was going to become like a fine art major, actually. Mm. And so I applied to a couple of colleges, but I landed on a school in Washington, D.C. called the Corcoran College of Art and Design. They actually changed their name because of they got absorbed by George Washington University.
Okay.
But I'm going to keep it OG. But even then, I was like, I wanted to major in printmaking. Because in high school, I got a museum job doing printmaking. And so I want to do that. And my studies for college, but they didn't offer a bachelor degree in that. And so I look at their programs, small art school, and they only had like five. And I picked this thing called graphic design. And I really went into this career, this studies on a hunch. Mm. I didn't know what's going to be the outcome. I didn't have like a 5-year plan or 4-year plan. I was just like, I was thankful to get some scholarships and have some like, and able to attend this school in Washington, D.C., now I love it. You know, you go to art school, you take all the type of classes from coding, logo design, branding, right. Print, digital web, and I was just really fascinated about that. And, you know, you learn in school, like, compared to art, at least from my understanding, that design can solve business problem, improve people's lives. I felt there was more purpose to going to graphic design, and so I'm glad to follow that gut feeling and be in this industry.
No, that's cool. Yeah. That's cool. So where were you originally from?
Yeah. Before Washington, D.C., I lived there for nine years. Mm-hmm. But before that, I was raised in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. But fun fact, I was born in Thailand.
Nice.
In a small bordering village.
Okay.
I hope I'm pronouncing it right. I was born in a village called Ranyapotet.
Okay.
Cool. My siblings might listen to this podcast and they might say, like, you said it wrong. But no, I'm an immigrant refugee. Mm-hmm. My family fled the Cambodian Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And I was born in a village over there, but we moved to the States a month after my first birthday.
Okay.
And so raised in Philly. Shout out to North Philly, Onier, if any listeners know that neighborhood. So I was originally from Philadelphia.
Okay, cool. And as you said, siblings, you are a triple it.
Right. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah, and we were a big surprise to my parents. Yeah, I'm a triplet. I have two brothers that looks like me, kind of. You know, we try our best to have different haircuts, wear different colors to help people out, you know. But we're the youngest of, like, a lot of siblings. Like, when you have to think about, like...
How much siblings do you have?
I'm right now counting with my fingers because I'm always, like, saying the wrong number every single time. I have, like, four other... Well, beside the triplets, we have four older siblings. So,
seven.
Yeah, we're a big family, man.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy. My mom, she doesn't have any triplets or anything like that.
Yeah.
I'm one of seven, too.
Yeah, but, like, imagine, like, you have your, like,
you
what,
have
four kids?
And one day.
Yeah, and then, hey, surprise, your family just doubled in size.
That is crazy.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Like, seriously, shout out to my mom. Just, she's a superwoman. Like, that's, real, like.
That's awesome. So, all right, so you went to college.
Yeah.
You know, you got your degree in design. Like, where did your journey go after that once you graduated?
Yeah, even during school, I was really ambitious to, like, start working in the design world right away. And I was lucky after my sophomore year, I snagged an internship at a small design studio in D.C. The summer before my junior year. And, I really wanted to stay in D.C.
Okay.
Because, you know, like, I was out of state. And so you would, like, in the summer winter breaks, you would go back home. But for me, I was like, I want to stay in D.C., just keep on working.
Gotcha.
And so I was, like, thankful to get a job that summer. And I found, like, a little bedroom at a friend's place.
Mm-hmm.
I started working right away,
gotcha.
Like, in college. So I worked at a couple of small agencies. D.C. is really interesting because you could totally hop around.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at a church for about half a year.
Nice.
And that was fascinating to do sermon visual, like, graphics for churches, for a church. And then, I also did a short sprint in the government.
Mm.
There's a need there, too.
Right,
which
is true.
Yeah, it's all about where you want to align your passion. And,
right.
You know, there's a need there. It's just, if you're that kind of designer that see doing your creative work through the government,
mm-hmm.
that this is a nice niche. And I know a lot of great designers working in the government space, and they're doing some inspiring work there. But for me, I was like, I like the agency world, and so I worked at a place called Graphic out in Alexandria. Thankful that I got an internship there out of college, and now I'm a visual designer at a digital experience and integrated agency called Huge. I'm in the D.C. office, but we're based headquartered in Brooklyn, and we have offices around the world.
Right.
And I've been there for a couple of years now. I've stayed in the D.C. area, worked at a couple of agencies and a couple of different spots.
So what is it that drew you so much to the D.C. area?
You know, definitely the community there.
Okay.
Like, yeah, no, it's fun. When I graduated college, all my friends, family thought, hey, so you're gonna come back to Philadelphia? But it seems like Philadelphia has a vibrant, thriving creative community there.
True.
You know, I left Philadelphia young, and so I didn't know how vibrant it or how connected it is. And, but Philly does have that. It had a couple of nicknames, but it's known as the city of brotherly love. But it's also known as city of the arts. Because there's so many murals around there, and we have there's a lot of artists that came through and do some great murals around Philly. You could definitely do a mural tour around there, and so Philly is also very inspiring. But I like DC. I start going to going to meetups and design events. You know, thanks to AIGA, I just plugged myself right in. Right when I was a senior in college, and seeing the type of talent that are there who are running businesses and the type of work coming out of DC is I was really impressed, and I want to be part of this, you know. And also I felt like in college I was so inside a studio, and it was right in the last couple months of school that I started putting myself out there. And you know what, I like the people I've met, and I want to keep these relationships going.
Okay.
And so that's why, yeah, now, like, 9 years in DC, which is unheard of. You know, if it's like any big cities, you're more like a transplant coming and going. But I like this city a whole lot. And like,
That's cool. Me and my family, we got to take a trip out there one of these days just to kind of see the stuff and kind of Especially get my kids exposed to the capital. You know,
totally, yeah. I mean, I definitely do the tourist stuff, and you know, all the museums are free,
right?
And but there's also all these other small niche things, niche places, niche activities you can do and find around the DC area. But it's like that would require like maybe 9 years like me to find to see all of that.
See everything. So what would you say was the hardest thing you had to overcome through your journey?
Man, the hardest, honestly for me, it's imposter syndrome. Mm. You know, I've listened and heard a lot of speakers and talked to many creatives, and even for me, I asked other creatives as well, like, what's your thoughts on imposter syndrome? It's something I feel we all face and struggle with. And for me, it's just I don't think I've overcome it. But it's imposter syndrome because, like, I guess for me, it goes back to it's like my story. Let me share a little bit. But I grew up in Philadelphia, North Philadelphia, and yes, it's like the city. But my immediate, I guess, adults in my life or my circle of friends weren't pursuing something big or something successful. You know, I honestly thought my level of success as a kid, young, was just like, all right, after high school, you just get a trade job. You may become a cashier at a shop, or you work in a factory. Honestly, mm-hmm. my parents worked in a factory, and I just thought that was that was success right there. I thought that was just a level of, like, you made it kind of thing. But I'm thankful that I had mentors and people in my life that told me that, like, I had something to offer to the world. And so, but still, like, now that I'm in this design industry, I still feel like when I go around, I put a little facade up, you know? Because I guess, I still feel like a black sheep sometimes. And I feel like I try my best to relate to people, but my struggles and their struggles are kind of different, and my perspective are different as well. And so, I try my best to be authentic and true, but you know, sometimes you put yourself in a place like, I want to relate to people, but you know, because this world is, I feel like the design industry is very competitive, very saturated, and I try my best to be authentic, be true with my personal brand, but sometimes I'll twist a word or screw something. And I can't think of an exact scenario or example, but I feel like I'm an Asian-American immigrant refugee in this design industry, and I hope that I'm bringing that diversity that the world, that this industry needs, you know, and I'm what I'm trying to do and how I'm trying to fight that is, yeah, be a true self, but I also do a lot of community events in the DC area, and I'm trying to put myself in this position of, like, trying to inspire other creatives. I don't want to call myself a leader, but I do put myself out there, and I hope that my voice and me being present is a gift to somebody else. Going back to me growing up, I want to give it, like, Hank Washington here in Creative South said something, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And that's what, and I told you, that resonated with me, because I didn't see an Asian American immigrant designer when I was growing up. And so, hopefully, and that's what led to my imposter syndrome, but I hope that someone else could see me and not feel like an imposter, not, you know, force yourself to be a certain way, that, you know what, be true to yourself and be authentic. And that's how I'm conquering it. I hope that my representation brings is encouraging and, you know, inspiring to someone else.
I like that, man. I really do respect you for that, man. And yes, you are a leader, bro. Own it, claim it. You are a leader.
Yeah, and, I appreciate that.
You know, it's true. We there's no need to sugarcoat it. There's no need to, like, you know, like, there's not a lot of minorities in design world. And it's a fact, but little by little.
Yeah,
it's changing little by little.
Yeah, no, I was thankful to for the opportunity to meet Corey Vinn at Adobe, and he came down to Washington D.C. to do a talk, and the next day we I'm on the board of AJDC, and we did a little breakfast with him, and I sat next to him, and we told him, like, it's a funny thing to say to somebody, a funny compliment, but I told him, like, thank you for existing, right. You know, and it's like, and it was a funny comment, we laughed about it, but, like, it's true, it's like, Corvin is, like, an inspiration to me, and it's like, he's someone that I sought to be like, and hopefully I could be my own, like, my own unique Raksa to someone else. And I said it to him because honestly, like, representation does matter, you know. And so it's people like Hank Washington who spoke on the Kristoff stage and put it out there, and you know, you got the Corey Vane, you got the Chris Doe, you know. It's what this industry needs, just so that when we think about the emerging design, when we think about, you know, you think about like the next generation of creatives, you know. In my role in DC is like organizing events for emerging designers. And emerging design, like this design industry is so inviting to so many different people.
That's true.
You know, but hopefully those people that we're inviting into this industry from every racial and social background could feel welcome.
Right.
And feel like they can contribute, you know. Because yeah, someone believed in me, you know, that they believe that I could contribute something. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we have to look at it as a profession. And it should be judged as that, not anything else. You know what I mean? Like, you're a designer, and whatever you look like, or whatever the case may be, shouldn't matter.
Yeah.
It should never matter.
Yeah.
Like, if you go on a construction site,
yeah,
like, nobody's worrying about it. Who is the black electrician? Who's that person? Who is that cement worker? Like, nobody cares about that. Like, we all here to build a building. And
yeah.
And that's how the design industry should be.
Mm.
But, you know, we know that's not the case. But little by little,
you,
like Hank, all these different people, little by little, it's been put in the forefront. And what you're doing over there in D.C., keep doing it, because it's a process and it's a long game. But little by little, you know what I mean, it's chipping away, and that's a good thing. Boy. All right, so who would you say are in your support system, your people that kind of bring you, you know what I mean, believe in you, build you up?
It does go back in time a little bit. It's like, at least shout out to the person who actually believed in me. I called her like my Jewish grandma, and I actually never had grandparents, but she's like the Jewish grandma in my life. Her name was Donna Vernick. She was a music leader at a inner city Christian ministry called Jesus Children Fellowship, and it was based in North Philadelphia. It was founded by a man named Alan Graham. But this ministry intent was to reach out to Cambodian immigrant families in the North Philly area. And it had that church, a godly mission to them. But it was also growing up in that neighborhood, you know, on the streets, they wanted to take them off and give them a message and hopefully give them a community. And so I made so many friends in this little ministry. But Donna Vernick was a music leader. I know she came to my life when I was about 10 years old, and she was there until I was 23. This ministry was great to have in my life because they brought positivity and they brought purpose to my life. And Donna Vernick, I remember when I was in high school, going back, applying for schools and everything. Again, my level of like what success looked like was still like very, very, very different. And I was like, I'm just like, maybe I could do college. I don't know if I can afford it. But when I was telling all this, I remember we're in this church basement, and she told me that that I have something to offer to this world. You know, she knew I was creative, musically and visually. And she's the one that told me to have faith and know that there's a future ahead of you, and that you have something to offer. Unfortunately, she passed away a couple of years ago, and I definitely, that's why I want to talk about her story, and I hope to keep her legacy going as she inspired me and pushed me to go. I hope that I can do the same to someone else. And so Donna Vernick was someone who believed in me when I was young. And so nowadays, I truly believe in community. I feel like you definitely need people who are better than you, but also people that can relate to you and inspire you, that know your struggles, whether it's in your work or in your faith.
Right,
Right, so I have this mesh of like faith community and creative community.
And now it's kind of mixed.
You got
creative.
Yeah.
People that have faith, and now you get this merge.
Yeah.
Of both interests collide.
Yeah, and I think we can't go through this journey alone, and we need people alongside us, inspiring you, pushing you. That's my backbone now.
That's true. I mean, how me and Raksa
got connected
because we went on a retreat together.
Yeah.
And a bunch of brothers who have faith under our designers and creatives. We had one musician there, and we kind of just relax.
Yeah.
Act like goofballs.
Oh, man.
But got deep.
Yeah.
It was like really big. We got a chance to really connect with each other.
Yeah, and for me, when I go around and socialize, like Washington, D.C. is a very sociable city. Like, there's meetups for every type, every niche, mm-hmm. And it's every, for the design community, I mean, people show up with different intent, I feel like, as an organizer. I mean,
right.
I know, like, if you sign up just to network or you sign up just, you want to make friends,
Right.
But I'm on the side where, like, let's be more than connections and a LinkedIn number or a Instagram follower. Let's actually be friends, let's have real conversations. Like, I understand, like, design is your passion and your drive and maybe and your livelihood. But what I'm always curious about, what makes you tick, what inspires you, what makes you happy, what brought you down,
So let's jump into some fun questions. What's that thing you can't live without that's not your phone?
Oh, man. Something I can't live without that's not my phone. I think it's depends on paper. We live in a digital age. When I do get some free time, maybe on the weekend, and I live in the district of D.C., and so I'm within walking distance of all the great museums. And sometimes I want to just get away from the computer. Even if I'm working on a little something, I love my iPad, I love Procreate and everything. And, I love the resources we have on the internet. But sometimes you should draw inspirations, like at a museum outside in nature. And so I'll have my phone with me, but like, I can't live without pencil and paper. I feel like that approach of processing your thoughts mm-hmm. is really helpful. Through that approach, and so I can't live without that tool. It's a fun thing. I think my girlfriend asked me, it's like, if I was on an island, what is an object that what is one or three objects that I would take with me? At first it was one, and then got really indecisive, and she's like, okay, maybe three, and I at least one of them was or two of them, I guess if you count as two, it was like pencil and paper. I think I could totally ditch the phone if I was like on a desert island. It's like, okay, just give me pencil and paper, like endless supplies of pencil and paper. I'll just doodle, draw, and just make that like my all.
Nice. Book recommendations.
Yeah. Book recommendations. Oh man, I'm like, can I cheat? It's like, if I'm honest, I've at least lately I've just been more of a podcast consumer. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've been really bad. Like committing to reading, but at least like it's been easier to learn from podcasts, just listening while working or just on while cooking. Is that cool? So best recommended podcast, I guess. As of recently, I've been a big fan of like the Design Better podcast by Envision. Mm-hmm. They do a really good job interviewing a lot of great creative leaders. Nice. In the industry, I think one of my favorite episodes is Mia Bloom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. Did you listen to that one?
No, I've heard of it.
You heard of it? Yeah, no, she's a. Yeah, I didn't know much of her background, but this is one of those episodes. Honestly, I listened to more than once. If I listen to like an episode more than once, twice, that's definitely one of my favorite.
Yeah,
Mia Bloom was really good. I believe she's a designer now. She's a design coach. Mm-hmm. But like she talked about presentation skill is a creative skill, you know, because that's like going to art school as a designer, you know, sometimes you feel like more of a production person, you're just getting the visuals deliverable out. But, you know, as we're, you know, growing as creatives and becoming more front center with people, I think her episode about that bullet about presentation skill is a creative skill I really take home with me. Another podcast I enjoyed is On Being by Krista Tippett. Yeah, no, this hers is really good. It's great for creatives, but it's a podcast where she interviews people, and like it's not just designers. She interviews even religious figures as well, but she asks all these different type of people, it's asks questions about spirituality, healing, and arts through their life, and I think it's a great podcast bridging the gap of creativity and spirituality, you know, and she doesn't like preach too much on it, but like it's really fascinating just how her she does just a great job leading these conversations. So On Being with Krista Tippett is one of my favorite. Nice. And lastly, Creative Conversations by Fast Company. So like I've been branching out away from like just all graphic design centric podcasts, and I think going back to inspiration is like what is that museums. I think even at work, if like maybe I got to stop looking at Pinterest maybe, or stop listening to like just design interviews, like they're all great, you know, like Debbie Melman's one was great to listen to when I was getting out of college as an immersion designer. Now just like how do I get inspired, and Career Conversations by Fast Company is a really good one, because they talk to all sorts of creatives, right. actress, comedians, mm-hmm. Music composers.
Nice.
But the interviewer does ask the same questions, like, you know, what creative advice would you give to someone else? And so it's great to hear how other creatives, yeah. quote, you know, in these other industry besides graphic design, approach their creativity. Yeah. And so it's nice to see into their world. In a way, it's like it helps you get perspective, mm-hmm. from them. Maybe there's something from an actress or a music composer in their creative approach that could maybe change your process or, you know, improve it.
Totally agree.
As recently was like the top three,
yeah.
I enjoy.
Totally agree. I've had different people on here that are not like designers but creatives, yeah. producers, like to hear a process of a producer and what it's like working at ESPN and stuff like that. Uh-huh. Like it really kind of,
yeah.
opens your mind to like how long game some of these guys play and,
yeah.
what they had to do to just get the opportunity to be a big show or be a producer for a big show or something,
yeah.
like that.
So yeah.
It's always interesting to kind of hear other people's perspectives. So what's next for Roxanne?
Yeah, I mean that's a good question, because like I never give myself that kind of like retrospection, and just looking like sit down and look at my life, and yeah, it's a good one. I mean, I guess from here just continue to push, continue to learn lessons from taking risk. I believe we're all still forever learners, and just getting out of FDOT presentation, you know. Keep on doing good work, mm-hmm. you know. I'm not only just honing my craft, but still try to become, like I said, a creative leader, right. to bring representation to this industry. Mm-hmm. I think this industry needs it,
right.
you know. And I'm still organizing events. I'm still meeting other creatives. Hopefully, just continue to have creative conversation. Hopefully, keep on inspiring immersion designers. Being that presence somebody might need. You know, learn, improve, and give back.
Nice.
I think that's what's next for me.
Nice. So, what advice would you have for any creative out there?
I think at least in this point of my life, be passionate about your works. However, whatever that means, mm-hmm. whether it's your day job or your side hustle, be passionate about it. Mm-hmm. Be curious about everything. Mm-hmm. I just gave a talk a couple days ago at a middle school class in Atlanta.
Nice.
And I'm actually basing this from just that little presentation. Be passionate about your work. Be curious about everything. Be open. You know, going back to pencil and paper. You know, and other points I've made, just beside the Pinterest, beside the Instagram feed, you know, listen to a different podcast. Mm-hmm. I started listening to like the sci-fi podcast as well. Mm-hmm. Not sci-fi, I'm sorry. Like Greek or mythology.
Greek mythology.
Yeah. And I was just more interested in just the storytelling of it, and just how does in this culture like come up with these characters. And I might have just started listening to that just because of all these Marvel movies, mm-hmm. and stuff, like Thor. Thor was just inspired. It was like he's a character that had been around, mm-hmm. even in those things. But I was just curious. Nice. And it's really nice to hear another culture. And it's kind of weird when you hear about them. But that's part of being curious as a creative, you know. Because I took that as more of a storytelling angle. Like, okay. It's like, this is how you tell a story and like create that narrative arc. And so, yeah, curious about your own craft. How can you push yourself? How can you be inspired? That's I guess what I mean by being curious about everything. Be resilient.
Nice.
I'm still growing. I'm still playing the long game here. But you know, in life, you get crushed, you get bent, but it's how you recover and how you keep going. You know, it's easy to give up. We all know that. You know, it's easy just to lay in bed, not move. You know, it's easy just to not make a step because it's easy to be comfortable. But we need to take a risk, and if we fail, it's like keep going. You know, it's okay. You know, you get better. You know, just by keep going, by keep doing again, keep practicing, I feel like I think I have one more. Give back. Honestly, don't be selfish. We're all blessed. You know, we all are blessed with what we have. You know, the knowledge, resources, and I firmly believe that. You know, let's not be selfish. Give back. Whether you become a mentor. To a mentee, or you organize events, or you give a talk on a stage. Your life, your presence is a gift. You know, your knowledge is valuable to someone else too. And there's so many ways to give back. But I think that's how I'm keeping my legacy, the legacy of Donna Vernick, going. You know, she gave back to me, and I want to just do the same thing. Nice. And so those are four advice I want to give to creatives.
Nice. I love it, man. I love it. Where can people go to find you, learn about you, and all that you're doing?
Yeah. My Twitter and Instagram handle is @_Raksa, R-A-K-S-A. I'm on interweb. I even feel like my name, Raksa Yin, is very searchable. Strong personal brand, guys. Yeah. that's where you can find me.
Nice. Well, dude, glad to have you on. Glad to call you brother.
Yeah.
I'm glad to have you as a good friend.
I'm honored to be on here. I'm glad to share my story.
Nice. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. I hope it's been super valuable to you and you're now ready to take your audience building, your community growing to the next level to help you and help me build our empire, for lack of a better word, or just to build our thing. Remember to stop by iTunes, Passion Behind the Art, and leave a review and subscribe. It's very important to me. It helps the podcast grow, and it makes me feel good to kind of hear from you guys, to know what you like about this podcast, what it's done for you. So jump on iTunes and subscribe and leave a review. Passion Behind the Art. Be blessed.